Welcome to another episode of Rhythm and Brews. We've got a great episode for you today, talking about one of my favorite bands. We're doing it with one of my favorite people. You may know him as one of the co-hosts of the Top 5 of Death podcast. I'd like to introduce my good friend, DJ O'Sullivan.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the show,
man. Thank you for having me.
I'm hoping this is the first of many, because after you and I talked about having you come on the show, I started thinking about episodes that would make sense for you to come on for, and I immediately came up with like 10 ideas that I thought would be perfect.
Yeah, I don't plan on ever leaving.
But as we were brainstorming and we threw out today's topic, I was like, that's it. That's the one I have to have you on first.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like nobody really talks about this band anymore.
I totally agree, and I'll talk more about this later, I guess, but I discovered this band, it was probably like 2010 when I mean, obviously I knew who they were, but I never like really dove into their music. And I don't even know what prompted it, but I was like, these guys are a big deal. I love other 90s bands. I talked about it on the show before. I'm a huge Third Eye Blind fan and have been for like a really long time.
Yeah.
So I just like, I figured let's check this out, and then immediately fell in love with it. And I remember just telling so many of my friends, like, dude, Oasis is awesome. And they're like, yeah, I listened to them in eighth grade.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I basically, like, got into them. I shouldn't even say got into them, but, like, around the time that they were huge, like, in the mid-90s, they were all over the radio. And I used to love, like, you know, obviously Wonderwall and all that stuff. But yep. There was a huge gap in between where I didn't listen to them. I was just, like, basically radio hits. And then later on in my life, I started to, you know, delve more into their other songs, and I felt like I was like missing out the whole time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because I was too young to like buy my own music, and I never really asked for music when I was a kid. So it kind of makes sense, but I'm glad that I decided to go back to it, because the songs that I've found later in life, I like more than the hits.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Even just for like the novelty, like you haven't heard those songs, or you haven't really spent a lot of time with those songs before. So
yeah,
they don't have the same, they're not as worn out as the radio hits.
Yeah. And now that I'm listening to all these like cooler songs that are new to me, I'm like, fuck Wonderwall. That song sucks.
Yeah. Like, I know what you mean. Like, it's still fine. Like if it comes on, I'm like, yeah, whatever. But it is probably one of my least favorite Oasis songs on my favorite albums.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well said.
I think you and I probably have a lot we can talk about with this band. So before we get carried away, we'll start with our usual segment, BYOB.
Okay.
Do you want to tell me what you brought and how it ties in?
Yeah. So I wanted to be a little less obvious. I did look up what their favorite beers were, Liam and Noel Gallagher.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know if you chose them, but like, I forget whose is whose, but their favorite beers are Stella Artois, which to me is gross. I don't like it.
Really?
And, the other one is Guinness, which is great. But, so they're both Manchester City supporters, the European football team.
Yep.
And, the official beer of that club is Heineken. So I brought Heineken.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So mine is, a little bit more. I brought Arrogant Bastard Ale.
Oh my god, that is perfect.
Yeah, if you don't know how that ties into the theme, then you don't know a goddamn thing about Oasis or the Gallagher brothers. Seriously, probably two of the most arrogant dudes the music industry has ever seen.
Yeah.
I was thinking about what direction to go with this. Do I just do something British? I didn't even think to look up what their favorite beers were, but this popped into my head and I was like, 100%, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because some of the most like memorable non-music memories I have of Noel and Liam Gallagher are from interviews or from concert footage. And I remember one interview with Noel Gallagher, where he...
That's going to happen a lot, too.
Yeah, I know. Where he was listing what he thought were the five greatest bands of all time. And it was like the Beatles, Oasis, and then like three other bands. And then another some concert footage of Liam. I think it's like when they were at the height of their popularity, and I want to say it was Glastonbury, and Liam goes on stage and is like, "You're about to hear the greatest fucking rock band in the world." And I like, They're so cocky, it's like charming.
Yeah. I think that's, you can say that about anyone who's British. Like anything that would, that an American would do that like you would hate, if a British person did it, you would love them for it.
And it's not, like, it's still a little bit annoying. It's just like mind-blowing that somebody could be that flamboyantly cocksure and like not self-aware of how ridiculous they sound.
That's basically what a professional wrestling heel is.
Yeah, except they know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I love these guys, and there's a lot of, I've talked a lot about how I don't need my musical heroes to be cool people that I'd love to hang out with, like as long as they're making great art, and in some ways it's really entertaining if they're assholes to a certain degree.
And they're not shy about being assholes. They get into fights on stage. Or they used 100%. To when they were together.
Yeah. I don't know. Have you seen that the documentary that came out a couple years ago about them starting out?
No.
It's awesome. It chronicles like their how they got discovered and then their early years, pretty much up through the end of when they were really, really huge.
Oh, cool.
And I highly recommend it if you can find it. I can't remember what it's called, but they just talk about how Noel was always about the music and just wanted to make great songs. And Liam was like, I want to be a fucking rock and roll star and like get into fights and like be a dick.
Yeah.
So it was like, that was like the immediate cause of the tension in the band. And anyway, so it's, I did this as a loving tribute to these two lovable assholes. Yeah,
that's
arrogant bastard.
Very clever. I wish I thought of something like that. I looked up to see if they had an Oasis beer, like a beer that
with the name.
But I couldn't find anything.
I did that too. I tried like Googling words from their songs, like because even Wonderwall is so ubiquitous that I could have seen there being some brewery that named a beer after it or something.
Yeah.
But what do you think? Should we do this?
Let's do it.
So I guess we talked a little bit about your history with the band. You said you knew them just when they were super popular. And would that have been like middle school for you?
No, I think that would have been elementary school for sure.
Okay.
Because I was born in 87 and they kind of came out around, to me, it was like 95, 96. So I was like, you know, 8 or 9.
Okay.
They're one of those bands that have this like sound to them that if I listen to their song and close my eyes, I feel like I'm like back
really
when I first heard it. Yeah.
Me too. And I close my eyes, I'm like, I'm back in 2010.
I was living in Malden, Massachusetts when I first heard them, and my dad was hanging out with like his buddies from work, and we would go over to their house for like cookouts and stuff, and it just reminds me of that time. I think we even went to like a fair or like went to see fireworks, and like you could not hear Wonderwall or Champagne Supernova, and it just reminds me of that time. And it's really nice.
I remember really my first exposure to them was from the dude that taught me guitar. He was like my first guitar teacher, and he was a few years older than me, maybe 3 or 4 years older than me, and him and all of his friends who were guitar players were huge into Oasis and Matchbox 20 and all those other like mainstream rock bands that I thought I was too cool for at the time. I was like, oh, I like punk, like whatever. And so I used to make fun of them for liking it because they had songs that weren't big up-tempo rock songs. That's really the only rationale I can think of why I thought I was too cool for Oasis. And took me years to recover from that and be like, this band is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I know. And I think about that now too. Like, are people now still too cool for Oasis? Like, if I, you know, go up to my friends who are in bands, I'm like, dude, do you guys ever like actually like listen to Oasis or get into Oasis? Like, would they make fun of me? You know what I mean?
Probably.
They probably would.
Or I think best case scenario, you'd have people being like, oh yeah, like I love this song and I love that song, but where have you been? Like, they, you know what I mean? Like, I think you might just get your balls busted that you're still into Oasis after all these years. And I think it's really hard to overstate how massive they were. And I wasn't here in the States when they were huge.
Yeah.
And I think you can probably imagine that they were bigger in Europe than they were here, just being based out of the UK. And so I remember even at the time when I was like not into it and everybody I knew was into it, just how like it was like fever pitch, how much of a huge band they were.
Yeah. I think in England especially, like, it comes with like birth, you know what I mean? Like, even there, they had like a, you know, the Manchester attacks like a few months ago, and then they had like the benefit show for it, and Liam Gallagher showed up and like did some songs with Chris Martin from
I didn't know about that.
Coldplay. Yeah, there's some videos online. They're awesome. I watch them all the time. And even Chris Martin does a cover of Don't Look Back in Anger acoustic, and it's like there's that song, and then Liam plays Live Forever, and like it's like a huge crowd of like young kids, and they're all singing along to these songs, which is crazy to me.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it's cool that even though like it's where they're from and everything, that those songs are still like as popular as they were.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what I was getting to is that there's something else about a band achieving that level of success that makes it not cool to like them, because they're like, when everybody likes something, it's not cool to like it anymore. You mentioned Coldplay or Chris Martin specifically.
Yeah.
I love early Coldplay stuff.
Yeah. I'm into a few songs.
Even like they have themselves to blame for why people don't like them in a lot of ways now, 'cause their newer music is way more lame. It's just not trying to cater
to people.
Yeah, totally. But even to be like, I feel like now saying I love the first two Coldplay albums is still not cool just because of the level that they're on. And I think Oasis is that same way, where even if the music is objectively good, people are gonna like shrug it off because it's so mainstream.
Yeah. I actually got to see Coldplay live like 16 years ago, at the WBCN River Rave. It was like before they were even remotely known. And it was like, I mean, at the time I didn't know what I was like, what I would be witnessing, I guess. And they were very like, you know, Chris Martin's like on the piano and stuff. And they kind of didn't make sense for the lineup, because it was like supposed to be all like hard rock, and like Green Day was on the same bill.
That's weird.
Yeah. So,
and they're definitely like a soft rock band, or they were at the time for sure.
Yeah.
And so I think seeing any band whose music you don't know, it's hard to make out what the songs even are live and like what they're saying. And so if you have no context, it's usually hard to see a band, to be exposed to a band live for the first time, unless it's something super high energy where they're just putting on an awesome show that you like want to find out about the band afterwards.
Yeah, I've definitely gone to shows where bands played like that and I want to know more about them. But I feel like more so I'm at a show where there's a band that I don't care about.
100%.
And that was 100% Coldplay at the time.
This is not really an Oasis story. It's more of a Third Eye Blind story, but I think it's really cool. I've never heard of anything like this. One of Third Eye Blind's biggest like breakout opportunities was opening for Oasis. I want to say like between 94 and 96, something like that.
Oh, wow.
And they, like I said, they opened for them, and it was unheard of that the audience demanded an encore for the opening band. And
really?
Third Eye Blind came back out and did like another set before Oasis came on, which I can't imagine Oasis being like, yeah, totally, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
But
that's awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
I think I've been to shows where I've gone to see like the opening band, and would like people want to hear more from an opening band, but for like a mainstream show like that, that's unheard of.
Yeah, totally. You know what I mean? And again, just I can't imagine the venue being cool with it, because it's just deviating from what they were supposed to be doing. And then the closing band being like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like,
I would love to see what their set list was for that show.
Yeah. You mean Third Eye Blind, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, me too. I mean, when they're opening, they're probably only doing like 45 minutes at most, a half hour to 45 minutes. So I bet they had their whole first album that they could have taken from, and covers, and like,
is the South Side one their first one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I love that album.
It's one of my favorite albums. It's one of my favorite rock albums of all time. I think it's one of the most consistently well-written rock albums. And they're another one that just goes downhill. And Oasis are like one of the big reasons that I always argue that bands get two great albums and that's it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And then they slowly get worse and worse after each record after that. But
are you going to do a Third Eye Blind episode?
Definitely. You have to, right? I think I have to at some point. Yeah. Just a matter of like when it makes sense to do it and what the hell the beer tie-in would be and all that. There was something else I was going to say about Oasis.
I think I saw a video. I watched one recently of them playing a song, and it's a song that Liam sings, and then he like gets pissed about something and then just like walks away from the mic and sits down like a jerk. And
yeah.
Then Noel like starts singing the song and the crowd goes nuts.
They talk about that on the documentary I was mentioning, because I guess it happened a bunch of times while they were on touring. I think it was for the What's the Story Morning Glory tour.
Yeah.
And Liam just stopped doing his job basically, and so often would just leave the stage and Noel would have to pick it up and sing. And then other times Noel was like, fuck you, I'm not gonna do your job for you. And so they just played the songs with no singer and like had the crowd sing along. And it seemed really, there's so much turmoil, so many people leaving the band, and like Noel disappeared for like a couple of weeks and just like stayed with some girl that he met at a show. Whatever. I can't believe they lasted for as long as they did.
Have you ever heard like the regular version of their song and then the other one sings the same song? Like, so on the remastered Morning Glory album, there are like bonus tracks that have like Liam or Noel singing like songs that like Noel is the primary songwriter.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So he does the demos, and then I think Liam sings them for the most part. Like there's, you know, some that Noel sings.
Pretty much every song, yeah.
Yeah, but the songs that Noel sings, that Liam usually sings, are sometimes, like, they're, if you play them side by side, it's like you're listening to different songs.
I totally believe that, and if I had to pick, this is such a dumb thing to say, but if I had to pick a favorite Gallagher brother, it would be Noel Gallagher, just because I relate to him more because I play guitar and I'm a songwriter and I respect the shit out of people that can write really quality songs and kind of do it in a repeatable way.
Yeah.
And people who are great singers, I respect that too, but like it's kind of a one-trick pony sort of a deal. And but it's a bummer for me because I do think Liam is definitely a better singer than Noel. And anytime I've listened to like either of their solo projects, it just bums me out because it's not the same. Like Liam doesn't have the songs and Noel doesn't have the voice. So I can imagine in cases where Liam is allowed to sing the old hits that Noel wrote, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
But I don't have, like, if you were like, do you want to go see Noel Gallagher tonight singing their old Oasis songs? I'd be like, not really. Like, it just would make me sad.
Liam is actually playing next weekend in Boston.
BDI or solo?
I think he's going to be with his band.
Okay.
And then Noel is playing in February. Like with his band.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that you said that Liam is the better singer, because I think that Noel has a really good voice, and I would think that he has a better singing voice, but like Liam's voice is the one that has that classic Oasis sound and like kind of makes it, like, gives you that like nostalgic, like sentimental feeling.
And maybe that's what it is. It may not be that he's objectively a better singer. It's just, it sounds wrong to hear somebody else sing the Oasis songs. It sounds like you're at karaoke and somebody's doing a decent job.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen videos of Noel singing like Wonderwall and just kind of like changing it up a little just to make it different. And it doesn't have the same feel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If Liam were to sing, it would sound like the songs are heavier, you know what I mean? Which is weird to say that Oasis like can sound heavy, but like in comparison to how Noel sings, you know, it sounds like soft rock and...
Yeah, you know, I think I know what you mean. It's just an attitude thing.
It's kind of like when Liam sings, you feel like you're like watching Train cover Oasis, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. I don't know. Well, I was thinking about this. I think I talked about it on an episode. If they decided they were going to do a reunion show or a tour, would you go?
I think I would have to, yeah. But like, I think doesn't Liam's voice sound different now? Like he,
So I'm not sure about that, and this is one of the reasons that I don't love their new stuff. Anytime I've given it a shot, for some reason it sounds really, really auto-tuned to me.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know if that's just because they were recording those albums when auto-tune became really popular, so they weren't. It wasn't as subtle as it is now that we've got like years of it under our belts in the recording industry.
Yeah.
But I can't listen to it, and I don't know if that. And I noticed the same thing on the BDI records, and I don't know if it's just that he can't sing anymore, like he fucked up his voice by smoking and drinking for years and years and years, or if like it's just something that he's now less comfortable with imperfections and feels like he's got to auto-tune the shit out of everything. I honestly don't know.
He sounded really good at the Manchester benefit, but I've seen videos of him doing like a whole set and it sounds like nasally and like there's no rasp to it.
Mm. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
In that same documentary I mentioned, they show them, it's really, really cool because it's like coming out of the success of Definitely Maybe and them going back into the studio to record What's the Story Morning Glory. Mm-hmm. And Noel Gallagher just talks about how he was just felt like he was inspired. Like he was just writing these bangers one after another and like was, you know, could feel it. Like these are awesome songs. And it's just flowing through me. And so they would show them him like quickly writing these songs while they're in the studio. And then Liam just like learning it in a half hour and just banging it out. And they'd show him in the studio and you're like, that sounds so good.
Wow.
Just so impressive. And it makes you feel like it feels like magic to a degree, you know, like, and I've had collaborations like that in my musical career, if you can call it that, over the years, where you just like have a collaboration where you're like, that person's bringing something to the table that I'm not, and vice versa, and we're both firing on all cylinders like we're not all necessarily always doing in other projects, and it just feels like this is something special compared to the other pieces. And that's how I feel about Oasis, that there for that short period of time, for those two albums, they were able to do something that is so rare and unique because the two of them had like the special sauce ingredients firing on all cylinders for that 10-year period.
Yeah. I mean, when you're saying that, it reminds me of Weezer.
Yeah.
You know, like Pinkerton and the Blue Album are like two of the best albums ever. And then after that, it kind of like dips a little.
Yeah. I don't know what the cause of that is. I don't know if it's that you're not hungry anymore, so you don't have that fire driving you, or if it's, you just spend yourself so hard on those first couple of albums that the songs are incredible and then you don't have anything left.
Yeah. Maybe you feel like, you know, you made these two like masterpieces and then you either feel like you have to keep up with it or you feel like you have to, like, you feel obligated to make albums for like your record label and you just don't like you, now you're just
you're
like,
not as passionate because the drive is different.
Yeah, now you're just like contractually obligated to like have songs and you're just like whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it too. It's probably like a combination of all different kinds of things. I think it happens in art a lot too, where somebody achieves success and then they lose their ability to self-edit because they're like, I'm awesome. And they don't challenge themselves. They're like, whatever I do is great now. And you can, I mean, this might be controversial. I think you could see that with a lot of like comedians who are successful, like Amy Schumer, even like Louis C.K. to an extent. I'm thinking of Judd Apatow movies where like for a while they were great and there were a bunch of them and then like they're okay now.
Yeah.
And part of that could just be changing tastes. It could be that inability to like question what's shitty about your own work anymore and like just be self-critical. And
It's kind of like you're trying to be great, and then once you think that you are great, now you're just trying to have money in the bank.
Yeah. You or know? You just stop trying and assume it's gonna be great.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's a disappointing, it's just such a disappointing trajectory, and I need to get into a headspace where I'm just okay with it and just glad, happy to have, grateful to have the great albums that these artists were able to create, instead of complaining that they can't make them one after another for 50 years.
Yeah.
I read an interview with Paul Simon once too. It was like one of the most honest things I've ever heard from a musician, where he was just like, yeah, I got to a place where I was like, I lost inspiration and I can't write songs anymore. And, he's since released a couple of albums that I haven't had a chance to check out, but people kind of rave about them. So it could just be like a dry spell thing where you got to give it a break. And if you just keep, if you're in a rut, we're just making mediocre records for years and years and years. Well, it might be better if you just stopped and let it build up with you for a few years.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Hungry for a comeback.
Stop and get that inspiration, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, what if, Oasis did like one final album that was like the best stuff that they'd both been working on for the entire time that they'd been apart? Like, that would be hopefully an awesome album.
Yeah.
And not something that would just like go down in flames because they can't get along. But
if it were on par with the first two albums, and I would probably cry listening to it if it was that good, you know?
Yep.
They have like that way about them that like makes you feel like, you know, you look back on like, you know, better days kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Does it ever happen to you when you listen to a new album by a band you love for the first time and you just have that like knot in your stomach? Like, what if it's not good? You know, I don't know if that ever happens to you. It happens to me all the time where I just feel like I'm at the circus watching somebody do a trapeze act. And like, it takes me like two or three songs to be like, okay, it's going to be good. It's going to be a good album.
Yeah. 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 I'm pretty sure I've had that feeling before. I'm trying to think of what came out like recently. Maybe like something with the Menzingers, or Gaslight Anthem. I remember, do you ever listen to Gaslight Anthem?
I've heard a few songs, but I can't
claim
to be into them.
For the most part, their like first few albums are incredible. And then they came out with an album called Handwritten, which was like pretty good, but it's like, okay, it doesn't have the same feel.
Two albums.
Yep. And then they came out with one after, and I think that one is better than the previous one, but it's still like not on par with their first two or three.
But now, I think if there's a little bit of a faltering, you're always going to go into the next album being like, please be good.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's how I feel about the Menzingers. Like, their first, like, I would say, I guess, yeah, two albums, but one of them is like an EP. Like, their like two best things are an album and an EP. But now they kind of like, they do have some of the same like qualities, but they're not as like hard as they used to. Like, they're not as energetic, and they don't have that same like, they don't give a fuck, and like, they're, you know, hard about it. Now it's kind of like softer and like, you know,
it's impossible. I feel like as you're up and coming to not have a different attitude than you do once you feel like you've arrived.
Right.
It's just one of those sad, inevitable things.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can spend some time talking about our favorite albums. I think by now, listeners, it's probably pretty clear to them that the first two albums are the ones that that we prefer. And I think we probably are both in agreement that What's the Story, Morning Glory is like the pinnacle.
Yeah.
There's some great songs that I like off of Definitely Maybe, but
yeah,
What's the Story, Morning Glory just feels like that's when they've ramped up and are firing on all cylinders.
Top to bottom, like, incredible album, I think.
Do you have we'll spend some time on What's the Story, but do you have favorites or any favorites off of Definitely Maybe that are worth maybe playing a clip of or talking about?
Live Forever, for sure. That song rules.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Actually, I should look at the track list just to be sure, because I feel like some songs I was surprised to see were after. Like, there's even a couple songs after Morning Glory that I think are really good too.
When I first started trying to get into them, I bought a Greatest Hits album, and I definitely remember there being some post What's the Story, Morning Glory songs that were standouts. Like, Lila was one of them.
Yeah.
And even I think Be Here Now stood out to me, but Live Forever, I think, is one of those. It's probably one of the songs that really put them on the map.
Yeah.
Off of Definitely Maybe.
It's weird to me to think that this album came out first and then Morning Glory was after, because I feel like nobody cared about them until Morning Glory came out.
I think that was probably true in the States. That's definitely when they really broke out here. Definitely Maybe was huge in Europe, just with songs like Rock and Roll Star and Shaker Maker. And of course live forever. And yeah. You're not going to have to watch this documentary now after I tell you everything about it. But, one of the things that they mention in it is that when Noel wrote this song, nobody believed him that he wrote it because it was so good.
Really?
Yeah. He was like, he played it for them and they were one of the bandmates or like a manager or somebody was like, no way you wrote that song. And he was like, yeah, I wrote it. And they're like, no, like, I fucking wrote it.
There are songs that they have gotten in trouble for ripping off like other songs, but it's nice to know that like the important ones are like 100% original. Like if I found out this song was ripped off, I would be really disappointed.
Same. It's got such a, it's a great like sing song feel throughout. And then I think the You and I Are Gonna Live Forever hook is,
yeah,
that's the one of the things that that stands out to me about songs that are great, or when I realize I love a song and think it's incredible, is when I am jealous that I didn't write it, or that I didn't write a specific part of it.
Yeah.
Or not even that I didn't do it, but that I don't think I ever could do that.
Yeah.
And
like what frame of mind do you have to be in to write a lyric like that, or even an entire song like that?
The lyric and the melody of it, the it totally changes the chord progression, and Liam goes into the like falsetto You and I Are Gonna Live Forever, which just takes the song melodically to a space that is not being explored in any other part of the song. And it just like really, I think, surprises you in a good way. Like you're not expecting the chorus to end that way. And
spoken like a true musician. I wish I could talk like that.
but all it is, it's in some ways it's like math. Like you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's just I'm putting it in more concrete terms.
Yeah, but you know, but the words.
But it doesn't matter what musicians think about your music. It's about how people respond to it.
Yeah.
And as a musician, you just have an appreciation for like the mechanics of what somebody's doing. And in some ways, I get the sense that Noel Gallagher is like really self-taught and probably wouldn't even describe that part of the song that way himself. Like, oh, and then he goes into the falsetto and I change the chord progression to this. I think he's just like, oh, it'd sound fucking great.
Yeah.
If it went like this. And then it does, and people respond to it. And I just think, in a lot of ways, being a musician and having all the background and the theory behind it puts you in a box, because you're so used to, okay, I wrote this song, it's got four chords, it repeats like this, and here's what the melody is. And having some, being able to have a freer, fresher take on what songwriting should be, I think sometimes allows people to create stuff that a seasoned musician wouldn't be able to create.
Yeah. Well said. Good for you, man. One of the, I think it's a bonus track on Definitely Maybe, is Whatever. Do you know that song, Whatever?
I don't think I do. It doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. So that's one of the songs that they get like in trouble for, and they got sued because this dude, Neil Innes, wrote a song called, To Be an Idiot or something like that. And it sounds like, it sounds exactly like Whatever.
Oh, it's on this, pulling the curtain back a little bit. It's on the Spotify version of the, I think it's the remastered version.
Yeah. I think it was also back when they had like hidden tracks and like bonus tracks, like if you bought like, you know, a certain version of it or whatever. Or like the singles, like, you know, singles came out with like two extra songs.
Yeah.
I think that was like what they released it on. And it's pretty evident that they didn't like take from him, and
that sucks.
Like they settled out of court.
Did they prove that they had heard the song, or is it just like they parallel thinking kind of?
I think they denied it, but they gave the dude that wrote that song a writing credit, yeah, and like gave him money or whatever.
The other one off that album is Shaker Maker, the one that's like basically the Coca-Cola song.
Exactly. Yeah. And they got sued by Coca-Cola, and I think it was Liam who joked that they drink Pepsi now.
Yeah, yeah. I love that line. That's so good. It's still a pretty decent song too.
Yeah.
Like it obviously is the same exact melody on the verse, but the chorus is still awesome.
Yeah.
I wanted to play one other, there's another standout for me off of Definitely Maybe, which is Supersonic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another great song that has a story behind it, where they were in there recording the other stuff off of Definitely Maybe, and Noel just started playing the lead guitar riff, and everyone was like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, he's just like, I'm just messing around. And they were like, that's the record. Like, that's awesome. What we need to do. And so everybody else went out for like a cigarette break or like to get dinner or something. And he stayed in the studio and just like wrote the song lyrics in a couple hours, something like that. I'm blanking on the specifics.
Yeah.
But a ridiculously short period of time. And then the band came back, he had laid down the guitars, and they just like banged out the recording in the course of a night. And it's one of my favorite Oasis songs.
Yeah, that's insane. I love hearing stories about like awesome songs and how they came together. That is incredible.
And it's just straight up inspiration. Like, there's, you can't explain how something, and that song is what really made them take off on like indie radio in the UK. And that's just insane to me that you could. I spent forever writing my songs, like literally years in some cases, just like reworking the lyrics and all that kind of stuff. And so when I hear stories of people who are like, I wrote this chart topping song in 3 hours and recorded it in a night, I'm like, fuck you. Yeah. but I love this song. Lyrically, their music in general is like kind of weird, and they would admit that they don't spend a lot of time on it. Like, Noel was like, I was sitting there and I was like, oh yeah, these lyrics don't really tie into an overall theme of the song or even to the last verse or to the last line, but I thought it sounded cool, so I said it and like put it, and it just works. Like,
yeah, that's that's honestly how I feel about listening to a song. Like, the lyrics don't have to mean anything to me. If it's catchy and fun and I want to hear it, then that's all that's important, you know?
I think,
if like lyrics are important and like they, you know, hit home or whatever, then it's just a bonus.
Yeah. I think different songwriting styles make sense for different contexts. Like, their music absolutely does not have to tell a coherent story or whatever. I think there are a lot of songs, usually by more people in a more of a singer-songwriter vein, where it does have to be very linear and tell a story, and I really appreciate that. I like when somebody can put lyrics together that tell stories in a compelling way, and the rhyme scheme is like really clever and all that kind of stuff. That's, I'm not looking to Oasis for clever lyrics necessarily. Right. I'm looking for something that sounds cool and has really great songwriting from like a hooks and melody perspective.
Yeah.
And a just rock and roll guitar perspective. Like, there's nothing that out of this world or extraordinary about Noel Gallagher's guitar playing, but the style and the sound that they have is so fucking cool.
Yes.
It steals from the Beatles in all the best ways possible, and then
it really does.
Just infuses some modern blues rock into it in a way that makes it, who can you point to that's like doing that and the similar like window of time? I don't think you can point to anybody that did that.
Yeah, it, like, they are such a like a band influenced by the Beatles that with all the lawsuits that they've had, how have the Beatles not sued them? Like, the opening to Don't Look Back in Anger sounds like Imagine, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
It's crazy. But like, I think that's what like I wanted at the very least from Oasis, is like, if you sound like the Beatles, then, or like a new version of the Beatles that like mixes rock and roll in like current rock and roll with like the way the Beatles were, like, that's such a good combination.
100%. And I mean, it's that classic thing that they always say, that what is it, good creators borrow, great creators steal.
Yeah.
And they just embody that so perfectly.
I know.
Anything else from Definitely Maybe before we crack into Morning Glory?
No, I think the ones that I wanted to talk about were already mentioned.
Is what's a good starting point, you think, for... You talked about before about how you knew the ones that were like huge radio hits, but you had discovered some new ones after getting into the album that really stood out to you. Do you have like specifics that make sense to...
Yeah, like Some Might Say, that one. And that's another one too, that there's like different versions of that song sung by both Gallagher.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the demo is sung by Noel, and then like the original, or like the recording, is done by Liam. And on like the remastered version of Morning Glory, it gets into like the bonus tracks, and then they have the demo version of Some Might Say, and then immediately after that is a live version of Some Might Say. The balls. Like, you're putting the same song back to back on your album.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
This is another song that's really impressive to me from a songwriting perspective, because we'll get to it in a second, but the Some Might Say section would be a fine, serviceable chorus to me. Like, if it was like this whole part and then the Some Might Say or whatever, I'd be like, that's a great chorus. And then they have a second, another section that's the chorus.
Yeah.
And it's great. And it's just, you can, the workmanship of it, that they could have settled for a good, solid chorus and were like, no, let's fuck them in the face with like a huge arena rock chorus.
Yeah. And what I love about them too is like, or any artist, is when you have a chorus and then, so there's like the first part, the first chorus, right? And then you go into another verse and then you go back into the chorus, but the lyrics are different in the chorus.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that they're not like lazy about like putting the same lyrics as the chorus. And it's fine if they do, but like,
it's
to
just
switch
a nice
it up,
twist.
Yeah, to switch up a little is like so refreshing.
100%. Because, and it's just another way of subverting expectations, because you think you've, all right, you're like, I got it. I heard the verse, I heard the pre-chorus, I heard the chorus. I know what I'm in for the next time around. And you're like, oh, that's, I wasn't expecting that. I still love the melody and that's still familiar to me.
Yeah.
But they changed the lyrics a little bit and that just puts a nice little update on it.
Yeah. And I feel like it's more like, it makes it feel more important to you that like when you know the lyrics, if you were to go like sing that song live, you sing like, you know every word, and like even when like the new lyrics pop up, it's kind of like a win for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The other version of it is like, this happens all the time on like a final chorus where the singer will just play with the melody a little bit and do like get fancy with it.
Yeah.
Pretty much. It's a similar kind of idea where you're just, again, subverting expectations and throwing people a nice little treat that they weren't expecting as part of the last chorus. And it's like the best way probably to keep a song interesting throughout.
Yeah. I think this song in particular is like the best example for each singer having their own version. Like if you go see Noel Gallagher acoustic and he plays a song, it's like a really cool, intimate experience. And then when you go see a full band like Liam or even like Oasis in general, like playing the song, it's like a good like rock song and you're like, you know, jumping around and it's like really fun to sing along to. So like this song overall is just the best.
I love this song.
Yeah.
It's so catchy. There's some other great ones on this too. Like Katrina, her favorite song is She's Electric.
Yeah. Which that song,
it's a straight up Beatles song.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's also a part in that song that I can't help but joke about. That it's like, she's electric. She's got a cousin. In fact, she's got about a dozen. She's got one in the oven.
One of the cousins?
Yeah, it's like, she's got a cousin in the oven?
Well, that song is a perfect example of their nonsense lyrics.
Yeah.
Because there's one song that's like, she's got a sister, and God only knows how I missed her, and on the palm of her hand is a blister, and I need more time.
Yeah.
Take a second pass at that, man. Like, that's... What could that possibly be about?
Yeah, I know. Step Out, that's another one, too. That another lawsuit song.
Oh really?
Yeah. I don't know if you want to put it on, because I can't think of like what the part is, but I remember listening to it and I'm like, that sounds 100% like Uptight by Stevie Wonder.
Is that what they got sued for?
Yes. And then actually, like, so I never like looked at it, like looked into it, and I looked into it last night to see if like anyone said anything, and that's one of the like lawsuits they had. I was like, holy shit, like, I forget what part it is. I think it's in the chorus. Yeah, it's like further in.
It's, you know, it's hard because even if there are elements that, like, I think they should have to give a writing credit if something is like definitely lifted from it, but people need to be less uptight about that kind of stuff because there are only so many melodies you can make.
Yeah, I think it's coming up. Yeah. I think it's ready, yeah.
Oh my god, that is the exact chorus.
Yeah.
That is egregious.
I know.
Well, it was also different back then, too, because now this happens to me a lot where I'll write something and I'll be like, ugh, that sounds like something.
It sounds like Stevie Wonder.
It's easier. Right. It sounds like Uptight, Everything Is All Right by Stevie Wonder. Happens to me constantly. That song, always.
Can't write another song.
But where, especially a lyric, and I'll be like, I bet that's been said before. And then you can Google it and be like, yeah. Shit. New song. Back then you couldn't really do that. This is obviously a melody thing, which is harder to search anyway, but still.
Yeah. I mean, there's no escape from, like, I blatantly ripped this song off. Like, how do you not, like...
But I honestly could imagine that it was not intentional. Like, yeah. They just know that song and they're like, oh, that would be a great melody here. And then they wrote that song.
I know.
And then, but what's surprising to me is that nobody, from their management team to anyone in the band to anybody in the recording studio, was like, sounds a lot... You guys know Stevie Wonder? Sounds a lot like Uptight. I don't know, but you just are surrounded by yes men at that point.
Yeah. Did you know they did a cover of Come On, Feel the Noise?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's another, like, bonus track on, like, the remastered album. But it's really good. Like, I was very surprised. Like,
interesting.
Yeah. I was like, did they, like... It got to the point where I was like, did they just 100% rip off, like, this song? But it's just a cover.
They're just in such a bad...
Yeah.
They've got such a bad reputation for ripping stuff off that they fully do a cover and they're like, nope, it's our song.
Yeah.
There's that arrogance again.
But they actually, like, make that song tolerable. Like, it's like their version is way better than the original. Mm. It, like, who is it that sings the, is it Twisted Sister? Like,
that
some other
sounds right, but I couldn't tell you.
It's like that Simpsons joke where that hair band plays and they're like, you know, we're Whitesnake. And they're like, oh, I thought we were Quiet Riot. And they're like, yeah. And it goes into, it's like the same band.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things about this album that I think is really interesting is it feels like an arena rock album, like, whereas the first album is more of, like, the stylistically is more what I associate with Oasis, which is, like, that blues rock Beatles-inspired thing. But, like, a song like What's the Story, Morning Glory, or Some Might Say, I guess less so with Some Might Say, but What's the Story, Morning Glory, I could see that being... the Scorpions or something, you know what I mean? Like, it has that quality to it. I'll throw that on.
Are you familiar with Bonehead's Bank Holiday?
I don't think so.
That's like 100% a Beatles song. Like, not like one that they, like, ripped off, but, like, it reminds me a lot of something off of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Like, if you listen to the beginning, like, it's, I think it's got to be Noel that sings it because it's a lot of, like, high notes.
Okay.
And I don't think Liam hits any high notes ever.
He does the You and I Are Gonna Live Forever thing, which is in a falsetto range. But
isn't that Noel? I'm pretty sure that's Noel.
I think I'm going to disagree with you on that.
Really?
But, I honestly don't know. It would, to me, would seem weird if he just came in for one line of the song, but...
Well, I mean, he's a singer, so, like, he's got to, you know, sing on some, like, you might as well do, like, I can't imagine that these arrogant bastards are letting each other, like, you know, like, you think Noel is going to be like, no, you sing 100% of the song, even the backups, you know what I mean? It's got to be, like, if anything, I'll take the backups on the songs that I don't sing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's a, I mean, that's a lead vocal line.
You and I Are Gonna Live Forever?
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds like a backup thing to me.
I think the reason it sounds that way is he's singing in a different tenor of his voice.
That's interesting. Now I gotta look it up, because I was so sure that it was Noel.
And you could be right. Yes. But even thinking back to, the documentary. I'm just remembering Liam, like, singing that song start to finish, and if I was recording that song, I would sing that entire line. You and I want to live, don't want to die. Maybe I just want to breathe. Maybe I just don't believe. I'm trying to remember the next part. It's hard with another song.
Exactly.
Playing.
I was just going to say that.
But anyway, we can settle this afterwards. Mm-hmm.
Maybe that'll be the stinger at the end of the episode.
Or just me. Yeah, me being like, well, we'll see what the outcome is. I was going to say me being like, fuck you, DJ. But then I find out that I'm wrong and I have to like.
Fuck me, DJ.
Eat crow. Yeah. I'll record you being like, fuck you, Tim. but yeah, like it really, especially the beginning, that sounds like a hair band song.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it makes sense necessarily to play any of the big well-known ones like Don't Look Back in Anger or Champagne Supernova, but as overplayed as it is, I fucking love Champagne Supernova.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That song is so good. Yeah. And it has that other thing that I really like when bands do, where there's the bridge coming out of the chorus that they repeat, the like, the you and I will never die, the world keeps spinning, whatever. That's just a really great exit out of a chorus that's already like knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
And
I didn't even realize, like, until very recently when I was listening to it on Spotify, that song's like 7 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that should say a lot about that song, that like, I could listen to it for most of my life and think in my head that it's like a 3-minute song while I'm listening to it, but it's twice that.
Kat and I were listening to it the other day, and it is almost laughable how many of the sections it repeats.
Yeah.
Because they repeat a bunch of the like bridge solo-y stuff that usually you are only doing once in a song.
Yeah.
And it got to the very end and I was like, someday you will find me, because you easily could do it. And one of the, this is embarrassing, but when I used to do music for churches, that was something that was just like part of the craft, is like, how many times can I repeat this chorus at the end? Yeah. And like, we'll do a different way. So like, we'll do a big chorus at the end and then we'll stop. And now I'm going to do like a slower version of it. It's like really nice and worshipful. And then we'll bring it back up and build it, and no one knows where it's going, and then it'll be a big chorus again, and then we'll do it again.
Yeah, 20 minutes later.
And then I'll play a guitar solo for 15 minutes.
That song, I feel like I could never get sick of. Just the someday you will find me, like every time is like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of the, you know, a lot of songs, not so much with theirs, but a lot of songs in general, especially in pop music, I feel like you're tolerating everything except the chorus, and you're just waiting for the chorus to come around again because that's your favorite part.
Yeah.
But Champagne Supernova is, every part of the song is great. Like the slowly walking down the hall faster than a cannonball. Like it's such a catchy, engaging melody, even though it's not like the big hooky chorus part. And that's just how I feel about so many of their songs, is they're great at writing section after section that is engaging to listen to.
Yeah. And like, I feel like when I listen to that song, I'm in the song. You know what I mean? Like, I'm visually picturing everything that's going on lyrically. And like, maybe it has a lot to do with like the waves you hear in the beginning, like just crashing.
Yeah. It feels really immersive.
Yeah.
Do you imagine waves of champagne?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to.
Yeah.
But like, Wonderwall like doesn't have nearly the same effect on me as Champagne Supernova. Like, yeah, it's a good song and it's a classic or whatever. It's so like Oasis 101, but Champagne Supernova feels like far and away like leads
but
better than.
I also think that's because there's more going on with it. Like, it's more of a full band song, where Wonderwall could easily just be a straight up acoustic song. You don't need drums or anything else.
Yeah, and it also has like 3 more minutes on Wonderwall.
Yeah. Well, and it's not even, I don't think the chorus is as engaging on that song. And this is me going into like music speak again, but like melodically, it's not playing in a different space that they haven't already played in and earlier in the song. Like, they're not hitting notes that they're not hitting earlier on in the verse or pre-chorus. I honestly think probably the most repeatable or the most engaging part of that song is the "In all the roads that we have to walk are winding." I think that's the most memorable part of that song for me. And the chorus is usually supposed to stand out in a way that sets it apart from the rest of the song. I don't think it does as much in Wonderwall.
Right.
Which makes it weird that it was their monster hit. Like, it's undeniable that that's their biggest song.
Yeah, at least in America. It seems like people in England take more to Don't Look Back in Anger than anything.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That was huge here, too.
Yeah.
Those two songs together, which that's a good song as well, but I still don't like it as much as I like Champagne Supernova. Yeah,
I do love Don't Look Back in Anger.
They sing it
at like Manchester City games, like
really
as a chant. It's awesome. Yeah,
that sounds awesome.
Yeah,
they there's something about that song. You may not be able to unhear this now.
Oh no,
that sounds like the graduation song
by Vitamin C.
Well, the Vitamin C I think is lifting that from somewhere else too. It's a like a classical melody.
Really?
I think. Yikes, I'm going to get beat up about this, but by the bullies at school that care about classical melodies.
What's the example? Like
it's a chord progression thing, so it's like again, so hard to do with another song playing over it, but let's see if I can put it on. This is the graduation song? Going out on. Yeah, I'm gonna this is now going to be the graduation song episode. let me find Don't Look Back in Anger.
Listen to how much it sounds like Imagine when it starts. I'm trying to think of what the graduation song sounds like.
Yeah, I totally hear Imagine. Do your best to imagine the graduation song, because I'm not going to sing it over. I'm not going to subject the listeners to it.
Is it like the Here Comes the Bride of graduating? Like,
yeah,
like what you would think of?
Yeah.
Can you hear
it? It's that chord.
But I can't even think of what the graduation song is.
Yeah. We'll have to do it. We'll have to wait for the next verse to come around.
Okay.
But I think I've got it now.
Because
it's the as we go on, we remember all the things, all the times we had together.
Yeah.
But it, I think you can do it on the chorus too. What did I just say the lyrics were?
As we go on, we remember all the times we had together.
All right. Let's see if I can do this. As we go on, we remember all the times we spent together.
Okay. That sucks.
And I apologize.
Cool mashup, though.
I'm going to record that as a single. Anyway, still a great song. And like I said, I was saying before, you can only do so many melodies, and that's a chord progression. I will never begrudge bands for reusing chord progressions, because you can always do new things with a melody over the same progression over and over again. It's just like notable to me. Like I notice there are similarities to the chord progression, and it's fun to be a dick and sing the different song over.
Yeah. I also love Cast No Shadow. Do you know that song?
Yep. A slower one.
Yeah, it is. But and it's also like I think its only downfall is that it's basically the same thing over and over again. It's like one verse and one chorus, and then it repeats the whole time. But I'm fine with that, because I love the way it sounds. But yeah, that's another one that, like, there's like so many different versions of different songs. Like The Master Plan. I feel like that's also another like Beatles homage.
I love Roll With It.
Roll With It's great.
That's very Beatles-y too.
Yeah.
And again, not one of the breakouts from the album, but
yeah, that's like mid, like Beatles, like it's not quite early on, like when in Black and White, and it's like before, like their later stuff that like was transcendental. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like right in the middle.
Totally.
But yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah, it's not psychedelic at all. It's it's just rock and roll, Beatles chord changes. And
Did you ever? I watched a video of like Sacha Baron Cohen when he was on Conan, and he was talking about when he was at like a party with, or like an after party with. He was like sitting next to Bono and Liam Gallagher, and Liam Gallagher goes to him, "Who is the greatest living rock and roll legend right now?" And he's like, "You know, I'm sitting on a couch with Bono and Liam Gallagher. Like, what am I supposed to say?" And he says something like, "It's like, I don't know, like Prince." And he's like, "No, man, the greatest living rock and roll performer." And he's like, "I don't, Bono? Like, I don't know." And he's like, "No, John Lennon." And he's like, "What?" He's like, "You just said the, you said living rock and roll legend." He's like, "No, I am John Lennon." And it was just like, the, what a fucking weird story.
And again, the most arrogant bastard in the world.
But like, he's, as much as I love him, I don't think I'd ever want to meet him because I'd be so like afraid to say the wrong thing.
But this is who? Liam Gallagher?
Liam, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I like, I, but I'm that way with all my heroes. There's not a single musician that I would ever want to meet.
Yeah.
Because I would have nothing cool to say besides, I love your music.
Yeah, exactly.
You're such an inspiration. Like, I want to keep them up on the pedestal and let them be assholes in their personal lives, whatever it is. It just keep giving me the thing that, which sounds dickish. Like, it makes it sound like I'm objectifying these people and just wanting them to be my monkey and perform for me. But
love the monkeys. But you, but you would be able to hold your own because of your musical experience. Like, if I were to talk to,
but I mean, you know, you could not. I couldn't go up to like, I couldn't go up to Noel Gallagher and be like, "Oh, I love the way you changed to this chord in this song instead of this one." It's not like he's going to be like, "Oh, thanks, man."
Yeah, I know.
Because everybody and their brother plays guitar and like thinks that they're the shit when it comes to, to music. So he's probably heard that a billion times from a billion different douchebags. And
yeah, I know.
I don't want to be one more on the list.
Exactly.
So.
But I would totally, like, if anything, just be like Chris Farley on the Chris Farley Show. Like,
yeah.
Remember Don't Look Back in Anger? It was awesome.
I was listening to some interview with Adam Scott about how him and Scott Aukerman had U2 on their show, you talking U2 to me.
Yeah.
And he said I was like terrible at interviewing them. It just turned into like the Chris Farley thing where I was like, "Remember when you made Joshua Tree?"
Yeah, like, what else are you supposed to say? Like, I think if I met them, I would honestly talk about soccer.
Yeah.
You know, like, try and be a little
different.
I try
to convince them to do a reunion.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Although, as cool as it would be, or not as cool, because in some ways I think it would be like, I would have to go to the reunion, but it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine being there at the height of their popularity, being in the crowd, and Champagne Supernova comes on, and just like that, the feeling of that. Like,
I'm getting chills.
There's no way to repeat that.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Just like a moment in time that we'll never get to experience.
Yeah, that's how I feel about Queen. Like, I'll never get to see Queen live, you know? But
I mean, there's a million different bands that, like, if I had time travel, that's all I would do is go back and see artists that were before my time. And Freddie Mercury is just so singular. Like, I don't think you could find another performer like that even today. Even somebody might have the vocal chops or close to it, but never the charisma and never the, like, the songs.
Yeah.
Like, that.
Even the vocal chops, I would be like, no one's going to do that ever again.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, or at least not in a way that's as that feels not manufactured. Like, I think Adam Lambert is a fantastic singer. I think in the sense of technically speaking, like he can hit pretty much any note that you need him to, and do a bunch of stuff that your average singer can't do. But it's still not Freddie Mercury. And a lot of it's like the tone, the quality of his voice too, even.
Yeah. I mean, if it were up to me, I would not want that guy anywhere near that band.
Well, I guess it's hard. I was going to say, it seems to me it would be a waste of an opportunity to not, if you're seeing Queen, you should be doing your best Freddie Mercury impersonation. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, that's also a hard thing to say.
Right. If it were up to me, like, for someone to be the lead singer of the band now, I would probably want Lady Gaga to do it.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that would be way better than Adam Lambert. But you know, it's just not the same. Like, there's no point in seeing that band now, you know?
Yeah.
I would rather see Brian May acoustic than, you know, go see, like, Queen.
100%. Or see a great band cover Queen.
Yeah, exactly.
We probably played enough of their songs.
Yeah.
Is there anything kind of last words? You have any last thoughts on Oasis before we move into our final segment?
No, I think I'm good. It was nice to talk about this band in general because I feel like, you know, like I said at the beginning, no one talks about this band anymore.
Yeah. I wish I could do it more often. That's my probably my favorite thing about this podcast is taking a topic or a band that I just never get to really say everything I get out all my thoughts about.
Yeah, it's like therapy for this.
Totally. Yeah. It's like musical therapy. Totally. So let's get into this. Let's get into our drinking game. I'm going to crack number two here.
Yeah, I'm going to crack open a new one.
The game today is it's a format we've done before. You've got four categories in front of you, but they're not what they seem. Ooh. So as a result, I'm calling this Faux-asis. I knew you'd appreciate the pun.
Yeah, yeah.
So your categories are The Gallaghers, Live Forever, Supersonic, and What's the Story, Morning Glory. The way it's going to work, I've got a series of 12 questions that I'm going to ask you. From question to question, you'll get to pick the category.
Cool.
Until you've exhausted all the questions within that category. You're looking to get 7 out of 12 correct to win today's prize, a copy of Drinking Buddies, The Drinking Man's Thinking Game. I think that about covers it. Are you ready to get started?
I can't wait. Let's do it.
All right. Well, let's... Why don't you pick your first category?
All right. Well, let's go Live Forever.
Okay. A category on immortals, vampires, and eternal life. The 1986 film Highlander starred Christopher Lambert as one of many immortals who can only be killed by decapitation. How many sequels did that movie spawn? And I'm going to stop here and say, at your request, wherever possible, I'm not going to give you multiple choice unless you ask for it.
Okay, yeah, that's how I want it to be.
Okay.
I know that there... I feel like there's like... So it's just sequels, not total movies, right?
Correct, not okay. Counting the first
one. So I'm going to say that there are 4 sequels.
Hell yeah.
Fuck, that is awesome. Yeah. I've never seen any of those movies, but I feel like I've seen like Highlander 5, like whatever.
Yeah, well, I'm super impressed that you've never seen the first one?
No.
I want to say it's good. It's probably not.
Yeah, I know. I think I remember having it in my Netflix like DVD queue back when I was in the DVD part of Netflix. Yeah.
It's one of those movies that I think is really cool in concept and probably doesn't hold up just because it's like a sci-fi action movie that like the special effects probably wouldn't hold up anymore. Yeah. It's
funny that a movie franchise... like has 5 movies and the tagline for the franchise is there can only be one.
Well, it should be there should only be one.
Yeah.
I've actually never seen any of the sequels, but the first one's easily considered to be the best one.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's a TV show too, I think. Let's go with Supersonic now.
All right, this one is pretty much exactly what it sounds like. In the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise, Sonic can transform into Super Sonic after collecting all of the Chaos Emeralds. How many of them are there?
Ooh. I think I'll take multiple choice.
Your options are 7 or 9.
I'll go 7.
You're right.
All right. I picked that one because I figured there would be like a Sonic question. So I'm glad I went with it. I'll go with the Gallaghers now.
The prop comic Gallagher sued his brother for impersonating him in stage performances, even going so far as to steal his famous Sledge-O-Matic routine. Was that brother younger or older than him?
I will say that he was older.
He was younger.
Ah, shit. Can't win them all.
I almost asked you what his name was.
I know.
Would you have known the original the true Gallagher's first name?
His first name, no. I know very like I've almost been Gallagher for Halloween like 5 years in a row.
That would be so. what I like about the sentence you just said is how ambiguous it is. It almost sounds like you almost made a decision to be him 5 years in a row.
I think I saw an ad a few years ago of like his brother now like does that bit, like he's like the new Gallagher and he performs at like Elks Lodges and stuff.
He goes by the name Gallagher 2.
Oh my god.
I think he can't do that bit anymore because there's been like a lawsuit and a court injunction and all that kind of stuff. Jeez. But I didn't know about that. So when I was like, what are my Gallagher questions going to be? And I looked up Gallagher and saw that he had one of the headings in his Wikipedia pages, conflict with brother. And I was like, no fucking way. And I almost called this category, the Gallagher brothers, but I couldn't mine enough out of the story for three questions.
We need to work on like some sort of mashup where it's Oasis, but it's Gallagher and his brother Gallagher.
Or it's just like their songs rewritten as a parody about smashing watermelons, yeah, or something like that.
So now we'll do Morning Glory. Is that the only one I've done yet?
Okay. Yeah. So what's the story? I'm going to read you two headlines, and you have to tell me which of them comes from a real news story.
Okay.
So question number one, A, man accused of using fake penis for drug test, or B, Michigan woman falls 24 stories, dies, or C, both.
It'd be hard not to go with C.
It's A.
A is the fake one?
The real one. Okay. The real one is man accused of using fake penis for drug test.
Did it work?
I didn't read any of these stories. I just like
saw the headline.
I looked up real, like outrageous real headlines. And
we'll do what's the story again. So I'm like two for two, or like two and two, right? Two wins, two losses. Yeah. Okay,
what's the story number two? Again, you're looking for the real story here.
Yep.
A, condom truck tips, spills load. B, one-armed. Sorry, I have to pull myself together for this one. One-armed man applauds the kindness of strangers. Or C, both.
I feel like if I pick C, it it makes me accuse you of not being that clever. But I have to go with C.
You're right, it is C. Condom truck tips, spills load.
I need to stop thinking about that because I'm just going to laugh for the rest of the show. But I did read, I saw an article, I think it was like last week, there was like one-armed, one-legged man.
No way.
I was like, limbless man is armed and on the run.
Oh, God.
Supersonic.
Okay. What color do Sonic's eyes become when he transforms into Supersonic?
Oh no!
I can give you options if you want.
When does he turn into Supersonic? Like
after
in what game?
It happens in a lot of them. It's
not in the first one though, right?
I don't know if it happens in the first one. I know it happens in like Sonic and Knuckles and Sonic 3D Blast, and those are the only ones I've played.
Yeah,
I think it happens in Sonic as early as Sonic 2.
Okay, because I'm more Sonic 1, you know what I mean? I guess I'll take it. Multiple choice.
You know what he looks like generally?
Yeah, yeah.
Sonic.
Yeah.
Supersonic, I mean.
Supersonic, no.
He's yellow.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if that helps you.
Okay.
Because you've got an eye for color and design. Yeah.
Yeah, all right, yeah. So hit me with a multiple choice.
Purple or red?
I would say purple because they're that's the complement of yellow.
That's why I picked it as the fake answer.
Ooh,
it's red.
You bastard.
I know. So I think you're three for three.
Yeah.
Or you're three and three.
Three and three, yeah, yeah. All right. Live forever.
All right. So your second live forever question, true or false, garlic is never used to ward off vampires and Bram Stoker's Dracula?
That is true.
It is false.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, you said never.
It's a little bit of a double negative.
Yeah, that's why.
Did you mean, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt here.
I will make the statement of in Bram Stoker's Dracula, they never use garlic. That's what I'm saying.
That's not true.
They use garlic
in Bram Stoker's Dracula. I think that's actually the origin of that trope.
Oh, okay. Great.
So 3 and 4.
So I got to get 4 more now?
Yes.
I got to get 4 out of 5, right? Because it's...
Yeah.
All right, let's go with the Gallaghers.
The actor Peter Gallagher appears in which of the following movies? A, Sleepless in Seattle, B, While You Were Sleeping, or C, Both?
Ooh, I know he's in While You Were Sleeping.
Do you mind a little hint?
Sure.
I'm going to encourage you to go with your gut on this one.
I've never seen Sleepless in Seattle, but I feel like he wasn't even in the Hollywood grid at that time. So I'm going to go with B.
You're right.
Cool. Back at 500.
Yeah.
All
right. So 4 and 4, right?
Yep. What do I have left?
You've got one more Gallagher question, one more Sonic question, one more Live Forever.
One more of each,
You've got one more of each, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So we'll just go. All right. So we'll do Gallagher again.
In what year did Molly Shannon debut her famous Saturday Night Live character, Mary Catherine Gallagher?
I'm going to say 1995.
God damn it, DJ. That is so impressive. That's right. Yeah. Are you curious what my options were?
I guess. Well, what is it? 3?
Dumb. I did 94 as the alternative.
Oh, okay. So it was one or the other?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
We'll do Live Forever.
This is the weirdest one, probably. I had to really dig deep for this. Jehovah's Witnesses believe that in the end of days, a group of 144,000 people will receive immortality and go to heaven to rule as kings and priests. True or false, according to Jehovah's Witness theology, no one will be able to kill these immortals, not even God himself.
Ooh. I guess I'll say true.
You're right.
All
right.
That's pretty crazy.
So are Jehovah's Witnesses.
So now I'm, 6 and 4?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. So I got to get one more, right?
I need to stop relying on my guests to keep score.
I'll do Supersonic.
Okay, Sonic's ally Knuckles can also transform by collecting emeralds. What is Knuckles' ultimate form called?
Ultimate form?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I can give you choices.
Oh, man, I like for the sake of the episode, I'll have you give me choices just because I don't want it to take forever. But part of me wants.
Do you
want to?
Do you want to write down what your guess is so we can go back to it if it's not one of my?
I'm just trying to it has the name Knuckles in it, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. It's like Supersonic where it's like blank Knuckles.
It's a term.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All right, so we'll go back to it.
But you've got something locked in your brain.
Yeah, some like Bloody Knuckles. But Bloody Knuckles wouldn't make sense because he's red already.
Yeah, it's not that. It's more along the lines of Supersonic. So
is it Knuckle Sandwich?
He collected enough emeralds to turn into Knuckle Sandwich.
He turns into a sandwich. All right, just give me the multiple choice.
Hyper Knuckles or Mega Knuckles?
I'll say Mega Knuckles.
Hyper Knuckles.
Fuck. So now I got to get this last one.
That's right.
Oh, man.
And we're ending with What's the Story, Morning Glory.
Yep.
Just as a reminder, you're looking for the story... You're looking for the headline from a real news story.
Right.
A. Florida man pees on cop's sandwich. B. Murder suspect caught on camera pleads innocent. Or C, both.
I'll go with A.
You're right.
Yeah. Once you said Florida man, I knew, all right, that's definitely true.
But yeah, wow. Hold me to this, because there have been at least three occasions where I've been like, good job, you won the game, let me give you your prize. And then I just forget to give that person their prize before they leave my studio. Yeah. So make sure
I'm not
you
leaving
make with, me give you that
yeah,
game.
I'm not leaving without that game.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about Oasis? Anything you want to plug for yourself?
No, I mean, I've said what I had to say about Oasis. I will continue to listen to that band because I love them. I'm glad I got to come on the show because I've been listening since the beginning, and I'm excited that you found a topic that I can, you know, talk about and bring me on for. And, again, I will be back whether you like it or not. And,
just surprise some other episode.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, I guess listening to Top Five of Death, you know,
give me all the hit me with all the addresses, man. And
Instagram at Top Five of Death, Twitter at Top Five of Death, email at topfiveofdeath@gmail.com. It's just basically like four or five friends, you know, depending on how many people get to make it. You know, there's a lot of us to schedule, so it's just top five lists of a given topic, and then we talk about them. But I haven't been on in a while because of school, and hopefully I'll be back soon. But yeah, you can check that podcast out.
And I'll just briefly plug my website, wasted-minds.com. We mentioned Drinking Buddies, the card game earlier. We're going to do a Kickstarter campaign for that in the spring. So if you go to wasted-minds.com/Kickstarter, you can sign up for our mailing list, and we'll keep you in the loop on all the latest updates with the project and let you know once that campaign goes live if you're interested in contributing. But other than that, that's all I have to plug. So DJ, thanks a lot for being here. Like I said, this has been a blast. 100% we'll have you on again. To everybody listening, here's to you.
Thanks, man.